Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Steve's Left and Cafe Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. I see you clicking open a CD box. I guess you saw a good movie last night?
Not exactly.
Usually we don't talk about movies here, though, so I'm surprised.
I bored my girlfriend to tears last
night. And this was different how? Because you bore me to tears for at least an hour every day.
Yeah, but I don't know. She's more of a sucker for me than you. I popped in a video, and she looked at me like, oh, my God, you're not.
Oh, the stuff I watch. You got to realize, when Francis and I do the show, what we bring to you are the best of what we read, the best books, the best videos, the best whatever it may be, the best movies about food. That's what we talk to you about.
And sometimes, though rarely, the worst. Today, for example, VAT19 is an educational, I think VAT19.com, you can find them if you'd like to check this out for yourself. I don't recommend it. They have educational videos or training videos, and they advertised in a trade publication for a server training video. Now, I thought this would be interesting for two reasons. I mean, at Stage Left, we're pretty specialized, so I thought that a generic server training video, I don't know, but you know, I like to think, maybe if you think outside the box, maybe I shouldn't think so well of our own training that this might not come in handy. So I picked it up, and I also picked it up because, well, if it's very good, we'll have them on the show. But I like to be nice to people that we have on the show,
so we're just going to talk about it
without them.
In absentia.
And this brings, but as I'm watching this video, it's called The Perfect Server, Create a Waitstaff That Dazzles, Delights, and Delivers Results. What it should read is, The Perfect Server, Create a Waitstaff That Dazzles, Delights, and Serves Food from the Wrong Side. But it goes to show that in this industry, which is not, it's not like a doctor where there are medical schools
and you have to pass a test, there's a degree that you must get.
There's some bad information out there, and in wine there's a ton of bad information out there, but this was an example of somebody sort of winging it. And I watched this video again. It's called The Perfect Server, and it was a nice idea. They had two examples. You know, the one disheveled server with a stain on his tie who looked kind of grumpy and was hanging out in the break room and didn't make the sales.
I know him.
And the other perky, clean, well-pressed, on-time server who did all the things that her manager asked, or whatever restaurants are using this film or will ask people to use. However, she just did stuff wrong. Now, look, I think there's casual dining where it doesn't matter. You can say, go to the diner and say, okay, who gets the decaf? That's fine in the diner. But when you charge higher prices and do table service and pretend to be something more, you better deliver.
And you want to be a professional. And realize that there are people who are doing this as a part-time way to fill their time. And sometimes you go to a restaurant like that. And there are people who are doing this as professionals who want to be regarded at the top of their field, just like anybody would want to be regarded at the top of their field.
So off the top of my head, I'd like to, anyone who's used the perfect server training on their staff should come up with this list of corrections. I couldn't believe they got this.
You actually came up with a list of corrections.
No, off the top of my head. I wrote it down as we were waiting for the news to come to an end. It literally said, okay, remember, serve from the right and clear from the left. And then they showed you the waiter, and I'm like, no, that's backwards. It couldn't be more wrong.
That's actually backwards.
Just so you know what the rule is, you serve from the left.
Serve food from the left.
And clear from the right. You serve drinks from the right and clear from the right. You serve soup from the right and clear from the right. But you never clear from the left. Mm-hmm. So the video...
I'm sorry. Certain things in the world have changed over the last 20 years as far as the formal rules. So basically what we teach our staff is, be as unobtrusive as possible.
Right. But
that's
the, general,
the most important thing.
But so, like, if you can't get easily to someone's left, you can clear from the right. But you try to avoid reaching over from people. But if you're taught the basic rules completely opposite of what they are,
as well as what the customer's expecting, what you're doing in that moment is you want to be what the meet the customer's expectations. If they're expecting you to clear from one side and
you
serve
may,
from one side, and you do the opposite,
and you
may bump into them.
And you as a diner may not even realize that when the waiter approaches your table, even if you're not don't do it first, the first time the waiter comes and clears from the left, you sort of lean that way to get out of the way. So it's a way to make it more convenient for us. I have another tip is they have in the video they show never hold a wine glass with a stem by the bowl. Because the heat from your hand may warm up the wine. Okay, that's stupid. Unless you have very hot hands.
Or but what, maybe you got to travel, a third of a mile, half a mile from the bar to the table.
The reason you don't hold it by the stem is because you're going to get fingerprints and palm prints all over the glass. And then for the rest of the movie, they showed the waitress doing things quote-unquote correctly, and she would pick up the wine by the bowl all and put the wine down by the bowl. Now, again, in a casual restaurant, that doesn't matter.
Right.
But if you're selling a video training
that
people,
says the perfect server.
Yeah.
The other thing is, and a lot of people, when you're drinking your wine, if you're holding on to a glass of wine for 10 or 15 minutes and you're holding it by the bowl, you may actually warm up that glass of wine with your hand.
Right.
But in the 30 seconds that it should take you to deliver a glass of wine.
But actually, as a diner, a little tip, take it or not, if you have a stem wine glass, if you pick up the glass by the stem, you won't get fingerprints all over your glass.
Mm-hmm.
And just so you know, in a normal wine service, if there are multiple bottles of wine poured, and if you're dining with me, there are always multiple bottles of wine poured, if it's the same wine, you don't get a new glass every time. And so, and if you're at someone's house, you don't want to have to get a new wine glass every time. And so if you hold a glass by the stem, and frankly, if you're at my house and we drink a heavier wine after a lighter wine, I'm going to pour you the second wine on top of the remnants of the first wine. So don't muck up your glass when you come over to my house. Okay, those are my friends who know you know who you are, right? My next favorite thing in the perfect server training video, it shows the precisely wrong way to open a bottle of wine.
Exactly wrong?
Well, you know, it shows it's the sort of the tableside service where you open the bottle in the air, which is fine. We use a Gerardon, we put the wine down on a table and open it, but that's a more formal style of service. But to open it in the air tableside is fine.
It's totally fine.
But what she does is she opens the bottle, and the service says, please, the voiceover says, always hold the bottle away from your customers when opening the bottle of the wine. Always, you know, open the bottle away from your body. Unless you need extra leverage, in which case it's okay to use your knee. And the server, like, she picks up her knee, and she does a knee thing. It's horrifying. You fail.
I'm sorry, I hadn't seen the video, and that amused me quite a bit. You caught me by surprise with that.
I was like,
it's okay to use your knee. And if your knee doesn't work, please use the customer's shoulder. Ask him to lean into it you a little.
So then the waitress hands the cork to the customer. Now, you don't do that. You never hand the cork to the customer. You put the cork on the table to show that that's the cork that goes in that bottle of wine. And then she, like, put the bottle down on the table. The other thing is, you never put the bottle down on the table. Listen, I'm bored some of you to tears, but the idea is, when you're out there, if you're in the business and you're looking to be professional, there are good resources to find out what's right and what's wrong.
And rarely do you turn to your customer and say, hey, can you get this for me? That's really a tactic.
And the perfect server video or some video you find online might not be the best source, but the French Culinary Institute in New York is probably one of the best sources for information you can find anywhere in the country. We're going to be talking with the founder and CEO, Dorothy Hamilton, in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. It's 11:15. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And today our guest is Dorothy Hamilton. She is the founder and CEO of the French Culinary Institute. She's chairwoman of the board for the James Beard Foundation, and she's host of A Chef's Story, the 26-part television show focused on the careers of 27 master chefs, and editor of the book of the same name.
Dorothy Hamilton, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
You're a busy woman, aren't you?
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Well, you know, it's funny because people say, hey, you guys run two restaurants and a radio show. And I'm like, yeah, we're very busy. I just introduced you. I feel like a slacker.
Well, I like to keep busy. I also have a daughter, you know, a 13-year-old daughter that I spend a lot of time with. But, you know, it's such a great industry. I guess you feel the same way. The people that work in this industry are nurturers, and you know, they're into hospitality. So working with them, they're a nice group of people, and in fact, you know, they're family. Before service begins, they all sit down and eat together, and we call it family food. Mm-hmm. And so I think people who aren't in this industry might not understand how special it is, and I just love it. So when you love something, you don't even feel like you're working.
Yeah, it's true, but, you know, at the same time, you know, like Francis was saying, you know, people are like, oh, you guys are really busy, and then I talk to somebody like you, or a guy like Charlie Palmer, who's got, you know, 18 restaurants and a hotel, and he's, you know, decided to run a little farm on next to his hotel and restaurant. I'm like, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
I thought I was very busy, but I guess I could squeeze another 4 or 5 hours out of every day.
Charlie was a great interview on Chef's Story. I interviewed him. And do you know how he got started in the business?
Well, you're going to tell us, aren't you?
Yeah. He grew up upstate New York on a farm, mm-hmm. and he's a huge guy, right? And mm-hmm. a football player. And he was in high school on the football team, and his next-door neighbor happened to be the home economics teacher at the high school. And she didn't have enough people in her class, so she begged Charlie to join her home economics class, and she promised him that he wouldn't have to do sewing or crafts or anything like that, and he would just do the cooking bits, and he could eat it, you know, anything that he made. And so he didn't want to be this one big football player in the home economics class, so he got the whole football team to join, and he convinced them that they could all eat. And
it,
so
it's all about the appropriate motivation, you know,
it really
Dorothy?
Is, and he had no idea, he would love cooking so much, and so he credits his whole start to his home economics teacher in high school.
What
a great guy.
Do you know, I think that one of the things about these 26 stories and what this really, you know, in an age of celebrity chefdom, we see that, well, what makes a celebrity chef? Well, it's somebody who's on Iron Chef. It's somebody who's on TV. It's somebody who owns multiple restaurants. It's somebody who's wealthy. Or then, you know, in later careers, we look at someone and say, well, it's someone who is a leader of people. And those things are often all true. But I think one of the things that appeals to people who want to stay in the restaurant business, who seek out the restaurant business, is they're all interesting stories. Is the restaurant business still provides people the opportunity to take a non-traditional path? Do you
Yes.
think that's true?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there were so many people. Someone like Bobby Flay, you know, was kicked out of high school 3 times. He was expelled. And, you know, he didn't know what he was doing in his life, and his father was the general manager for a group of restaurants here, Joe Allen's Restaurants. And, you know, he said, hey, you're not working, you're not going to school, you get in and wash these dishes. And, you know, he just blossomed from there. He just loved the family feel of the restaurant. He loved, you know, the cooking. He was watching the chef, and he actually came to school when he was 19 to the French Culinary Institute. So I met him way back then when he was a juvenile delinquent. And he was voted least likely to succeed in class.
That's great
actually, when he graduated, his father came up to me at graduation and said, what did you do to this kid? And he just got the bug.
Yeah.
And look at him today. He's an Iron Chef. And the New York Times had a little blurb on Chef's Story last Saturday in the paper, and it was talking about the Bobby interview, and it said, you know, his father was in the business, but boy, he really made it on his own. What he's done, he's far surpassed his father, and he is a great guy. And that's what the interviews bring out. It was really going in and getting the psyche of each of these chefs and saying, where was your wellspring for this? And it came from all different areas. I mean, Lydia Bastianic was a refugee from Yugoslavia. She had to leave in the night and go over to Italy, and Catholic Charities brought her family to New York City, and they put her in a welfare hotel when she was 13 years old. And her first taste of American food was Horn and Hardett's Automat. Her parents would give her nickels to go across the street, and she just thought, you know, the way Americans dispensed their food was rather odd.
Yeah, but did she like it or did she not like it?
She did like it. She liked certain things at the Automat. I mean, after all, she was a kid, and those little windows were, you know, I remember going to the Automat and absolutely adoring it. But she did try her way of connecting her thoughts with the place where she was born was through food. I mean, she couldn't go back there. She couldn't see it. Nobody knew Croatia in those days, or Istria, where she came from. And so the only touchstone she had was the food. And as she said, her father loved risotto, and she kept trying to make it with long grain rice. And it just wasn't
And that
happening.
Was that, that would make it a little bit difficult, wouldn't it?
Right. And so, but you could see her, she didn't grow up saying, oh, I want to be a chef and do all this. What she was looking for was a bridge back to something that was her core, and then she fell in love with it.
When we come back, we're going to be talking more with Dorothy Hamilton about her television series and this wonderful book called A Chef's Story. 27 chefs talk about what got them into the kitchen. You can find out more about it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Captain Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. We're speaking today with Dorothy Hamilton. She's the chairwoman of the board of the James Beard Foundation, CEO of French Culinary Institute, and author of A Chef's Story, 27 Chefs Talk About What Got Them Into the Kitchen.
You know, Dorothy, a lot of chefs, and I think a lot of, certainly just about everybody in this book that I went through, there's a passion that each of them have. But not just a passion, a stick-to-itiveness, something that made them say when everybody else said, you're crazy, to make them go forth. I mean, we were talking about Charlie Palmer before. Just to kind of summarize a quick excerpt in your book. You know, you're talking about in 87, 88, he decided to open Oriole, you know, the days of Black Monday when the stock market crashed. Everybody's looking at me like, okay, so you're going to open a high-end restaurant on the Upper East Side with a big ticket average in the worst economy that's happened in 25 years. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, yeah, I can make that happen. And then a great quote. Understandably, it took me a little while to find a financial partner who shared my idea.
but that is a common thread through many of these successful chefs, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You know, the one word that came up 27 times with them was love. And it was not just love of what they were doing or love of being an artist/chef, but it was loving to serve people and nurture people. This was a major thing, that they wanted to put their feeling out there to nurture their client. And I think a lot of, I'll say lay people, people outside the trade, have an impression of a chef as being a little bit of a prima donna, you know, a pompous person walking around. And, of course, there's a percentage.
I was going to say, there's some of that. Don't kid yourself.
But that's like any profession. But the ones that really make it, I know here at the French Culinary Institute, our head chef, Alain Sayak, at orientation says to the students, if you don't love people, get out of this profession right now. Mm-hmm. He says, it's not about them coming into your restaurant and you doing your thing and they adoring you. He said, you are doing the most intimate act. You are putting food in their bodies. And he said, and you have to love them, you have to respect them. And, you know, so what if they can't eat something that you're making? Mm-hmm. You have to have, what's going to make you a great chef, what's going to make you a great restaurateur, is they're going to feel that love on the plate. They're going to feel that love that you want to feed them.
And I think
that's the basic. That's the basic that these guys have really gotten.
And that's the basic that runs through the whole hospitality industry, because if you don't do that, you're going to be cynical and mean very soon, because you have to love it every day, and you have to love, you know, feel like you're making a difference in people's lives.
You know, when people walk around this school, they say, God, it seems like a family here.
Dorothy,
you know?
We're going to leave that right there. We're going to come back and talk about the family in just a moment after the news. Central Jersey, 1450. It's 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcast on iTunes.
Dorothy Hamilton is the founder and CEO of the French Culinary Institute in New York, one of the nation's preeminent cooking schools. She's also chairman of the board for the James Beard Foundation. She's host of the 26-part television show A Chef's Story and editor of the book by the same name. Dorothy, we were talking before the news about a restaurant as family, and we come together as family, as a staff. I think that's true. So oftentimes a dysfunctional family, with a few black sheep and a few noble uncles.
Okay, hold on. It's mostly black sheep. There's a couple of white sheep.
Come on, you guys are sounding like Tony Bourdain.
Very often it's people who've they've been kicked out of their own family, so they have to come to ours. And also the family of our, you know, regular customers, and people come in, and there is something very familiar. It is like mom when someone in your dining room says, you know, this is the best meal I've ever had. This is our anniversary, and what a wonderful evening we've had. Mm. And that's front of house, back of house, sommelier, chef. It's a centerpiece to the business. And you know what I was reminded of when you were talking is that book years ago by David Waltuck,
Family food or
staff meals.
Where he does the very thing that you talked about. Many people don't realize that in fine dining restaurants, we all sit down together usually before service and take a half an hour and have food. And I think the good restaurants take some time to serve a good family meal, a good wholesome family meal where we can all eat together. And David Waltuck wrote a book about that. I mean, did these guys talk about that at all, the whole sense of family among the staff?
You know what? I think someone like Patrick O'Connell, who owns the Inn at Little Washington, arguably the top inn in America, if not the world. He's won every single award and has 5 stars and 4 stars and 3 stars, and just garnered by everyone from Michelin to AAA. And he has a culture. I mean, it's almost a cult about his staff. And I don't know if you've ever been down there,
but it's
drama. Mm-hmm. I mean, you arrive, and he lines up the whole staff to greet you like you're the Queen of England.
Mm-hmm.
And
with some of the expenses that are down there, you might actually be the Queen of England. So.
Yes, that's true. But you know what? You get what you pay for.
There's no question about it. One of the best experiences in the world.
And I hadn't seen this, but when we sent a photographer down there to do some of the beautiful photography that's in the book and on the show, he had altar boys, waiters dressed up like altar boys with incense going around.
Yeah,
he's unbelievable. And the Gregorian, you know, when he was on the show, he talked about the Gregorian chants in the kitchen. And
he plays Gregorian chants in the kitchen. He says it helps with focus.
Yeah, and his attention to detail is extraordinary. When I went down there, there was a picture. He had pictures on the sideboard in the kitchen, and it was of Al Gore and Tipper O'Neill. And he said, not Tipper O'Neill, Tipper Gore. And he said, oh, they were here last week, and it was a picture with him. And I said, oh, that's nice. And then the next night I went in, and he had a picture of me and my husband there with him. I mean, the attention, the detail is magnificent.
That's fantastic.
They are just, he's a wild man. He really is.
Well, go ahead.
I call it O'Connellville because he owns now the whole town.
It's a little Washington. It's about 60, 70 miles outside of Washington, D.C. And it's this tiny little enclave that he's created, and he's bought just about every property in the town. I mean, there's only like 6 properties in the town, but they're all now part of the Inn at Little Washington.
But one of the things that he has in common with a lot of, you know, fortunately we've been able to talk to a number of the chefs in your book and a lot of people who are leaders in the culinary field as well. What's interesting about the guys that rise to the top that matter to me are there guys who, or men and women who, really think about how to make, how to be nurturing, how to make your whole experience special. There is no more focus only on the food. And the food is super important to a chef, of course. But but it's got to be the whole experience. You used the word theater, but it's an enveloping experience.
I was interviewing somebody recently, and I was talking about how, you know, we like to do things, and how the interviewee described it was, you know, it's kind of like giving the customer a big hug is what you're trying to do.
Oh, isn't that great?
As when they come in the door, and I thought, wow, you got a second interview.
That's right.
How important is food and in the whole scheme of things? And how do these guys, do they have different ways that they make people feel nurtured and
You know what? I have gotten more passion from amateurs who like to cook, saying the food, you know, it's all about the food. These guys are true professionals, and I think they realize it's a real fine balance. Because if you're sitting having a horrible time because of the waiter, or in a smelly atmosphere, you're not going to appreciate the food.
Mm-hmm.
The food is a 3D experience sitting in a restaurant. You go there because you want to be treated well. You want to be served. You want to taste something delicious. And I'm not sure that chefs are there just to wow you all the time. I think they're there to please you, nurture you, provoke maybe some of your thoughts. I mean, if you go to Thomas Keller and he's playing around with his peanut butter and jelly dessert, you know, or his tapioca pearls with caviar, you know, and he's playing with your mind. I think they're trying to amuse you. There's a lot in the top restaurants. There's a lot of things going on, a lot of different layers, and that's what makes them so interesting, and that's what makes them so expensive.
Well, you know, you talk about earlier, and I want to talk about the French Culinary Institute, because it's a great school, and it's a great school if you want to go and get a degree, but it's also a great school if you want to go and take a couple of classes in one thing or another. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, because we just expanded to 76,000 square feet. We're in Soho, a great part of Soho down in Manhattan, and we have a restaurant that is the best deal in New York. It's $40 for a five-course meal, And what goes on here is we're able to do some amateur courses, and we've added a whole new Italian program for career people or people professionally oriented. We train here and in Parma, Italy, so you get the authentic feel for food. But we also have amateur courses, you know, teaching pizza and gelato and things like that.
Yeah. Go ahead, I'm sorry, please.
No, and then we have our classic courses, which are under the French Culinary Institute, where you learn nice skills in 6 months only. That's our big thing, is that we take career changes usually. And in 6 months, you've not had any previous training. We train you, and you go out into the best kitchens in New York. You go to Danielle, you go to Jean Georges, you go to Charlie Palmer. And we can, in 6 months, train you to be a pro.
I'm going to ask you a question. Recently, we had a chef on the show by the name of Nicholas Harari, who kind of railed against cooking school, and not so much yours, but
cooking
but
schools that take 2 years and 4 years.
A two-year cooking school, and he talked about coming out of cooking school $80,000 in debt, and thinking that you can walk into a sous chef job, and he really that upset him quite a bit, and actually he went to the school we're alluding to, and he thought that people were better served going to work for 2 years, that they'd be better off working for free for 2 years than going to a two-year cooking school and putting themselves $80,000 in debt.
Or 4 years. Two or four years.
Yeah, or 4 years.
Yeah, well, you know, I can understand that. But what I will say is, one, you were right. You have to pick the right school. And the thing is, I don't think you can skimp on price. Don't go to the lowest bidder. You need a school that uses great ingredients, has well-qualified teachers, has a small student-teacher ratio, that has fantastic equipment, that has a good placement department after you've been there. I also think, you know, our course is 6 months, and Alain Ducasse, none less than Alain Ducasse, has said it is equivalent to the 3 years of apprenticeship he spent. Our six-month course.
Well, and the other thing I think that you know, if a young person were coming to me and saying, listen, I want to go to culinary school for 6 months, and you know, it's going to put me, you know, it's going to be pricey, but it's 6 months of school, I would say that's a pretty good idea, because that can get you to the level you need to be to get an entry-level job as a line cook or more than a dishwasher or just someone who preps.
Well, we have 4.5 jobs per graduate.
Yeah.
Coming out of here. And my biggest problem sitting in a lot of restaurants is the chef comes out and he's angry with me because I can't give him a graduate because the job market is so hot here. But you know what? When you first come out, you're not a chef. Mm-hmm. You have to go in at the bottom and you're not going to make, you're going to make $15 an hour.
That's one of the things that I think when young culinarians or young people who want to be culinarians come out of a school and they come out of this 4-year school or this 2-year school and they say, I'd like to be the sous chef for $70,000 a year. And you think, but you don't know enough to be the sous chef. You know knife skills and you know skills. And now I can teach you about the business and the hospitality that we talked about. But that's $15 an hour.
Right. And they need to get the real life experience. School, they have people standing over them. They're allowed to make mistakes. They don't get under pressure when 3 people are missing and they're online by themselves. There's all this thing. But I like to tell people that you really have to shop. You really have to come in and be an educated consumer because things matter. You can't see education, but you can be smart about it.
Hey, we'll be back in just a moment talking with Dorothy Hamilton. She's founder of the French Culinary Institute, chairman of the board of the James Beard Foundation, and her recent book is Chef's Story, 27 Chefs Talk About What Got Them Into the Kitchen. Central Jersey, 1450, it's 1146.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis. We're chatting with Dorothy Hamilton of the French Culinary Institute and the James Beard Foundation, and also of the television show and book Chef's Story. You can find out about the television show and buy the book on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. But let's talk for a moment, Dorothy, about the James Beard Foundation.
Happy to. Yeah.
Now, you're the chairwoman of the board. The James Beard Foundation was a real central organization for a lot of American gastronomy in the rise of our current enthusiasm for American food. It was embattled with some financial difficulties under the last president, was actually indicted, and he's gone away, and the James Beard Foundation has worked very hard to change its image, change course, straighten things up. How are things going?
Yeah, you've been charged with bringing the James Beard Foundation back to, everybody's idea of what it always
right,
was.
It should be. Yeah, it's been a great opportunity. We actually have been the chairman for over 2 years now, and we've made incredible progress. Unfortunately, there was an incident a few years ago, and the president left, and the total board of directors resigned. And we have a brand new board of directors, which is a fantastic group. And we have been able to put together a lot of new programs. We're most famous for our awards, which happen in May, and the best restaurants, the best chefs. And I think that does a lot to provide light on the real professionalism in this country and who's doing great things. So we've continued those. We've moved Be Done in Times Square at the Marriott, and now we've given them a home at Lincoln Center. And I think it's really appropriate because food at its highest level is an art, and I think Lincoln Center is a great place to do our awards. But on top of that, we feel that our bullseye of who we have to serve are chefs and restaurateurs, and then all the people that support that, the journalists, the vendors, the winemakers, cookers, cookbook authors, They're all part of the James Beard family because they're helping to increase the awareness and the appreciation for culinary excellence in America. That's what we're about. We have a fantastic house in Greenwich Village called the James Beard House. It's Jim's original house, and we have a kitchen there, and you can come and eat there every night. We have a young American chef or a chef working in America who's cooking an elaborate meal, and you come in and you go on our website, jamesbeard.org, and it'll tell you who the chefs are and what the menu is. And you dine in this house. It's a whole evening experience. You have an aperitif in the garden, or if it's cold, around the kitchen watching the chef cook. And then you go upstairs and you dine at great tables. And you get to meet a lot of people, other gourmands who want to share, and you sit and share tables. Or if you bring your own party, you can get your own table. And it's open to the public. You pay more if you're not a member. So if you want to come and try the house, you could do it if you're not a member. And then you may want to join as a member. You'll get advanced notice of these dinners.
And I think a lot of people think that you have to be a member in order to go to those dinners, and that's just not the case.
No, well, you just pay more.
Let's talk about what the James Beard Foundation does, because I think you've done a fabulous job, because a lot of people had invested a lot of time and effort and faith in the James Beard Foundation, and a lot of them felt very betrayed when things went wrong. And I think it was a tall job that was in front of you to bring it back into people's hearts and minds and to gain the trust back. And you really have recaptured your position. You've helped the James Beard Foundation to recapture its position at the center of our industry, about what's the best in our industry. What is the James Beard Foundation's mission? What is it to do besides having these dinners?
Well, the mission is really to create awareness and appreciation for American culinary excellence. And so that's chefs, that's farmers doing wonderful things, that's writers, people like yourself, radio programs that bring the awareness to the American consumer and helping them. And so we're not just educational in that sense. We shine the lights on things, which is why we bring chefs to the Beard House. So someone from Louisiana can come and cook in New York, and the press can come and eat there and get a feeling for who some of these great new up-and-coming American chefs are. We've also started a new program, Beard on Books, and we invite authors to come into the house, and we have people bring brown bag lunches in, and they sit and they get to meet these great authors. We're republishing the Beard original Beard books. He wrote 26 or something books. I mean, a phenomenal number of books that are fabulous.
Well,
and we're reprinting them, and the proceeds are going to go to help bring young chefs to New York.
Dorothy Hamilton, you do wonderful work at the French Culinary Institute, at the James Beard Foundation, and thank you for taking the time to come talk with us today.
Thanks, Dorothy.
Great fun. Thanks a lot, guys.
Dorothy Hamilton also is on, you can see her on television on the show A Chef's Story, and you can now pick up the book of the same name. You can find out more about it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:56. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Fritz. We were talking with Dorothy Hamilton, the CEO of the French Culinary Institute, about this great book and television series she's done about great chefs. And what she said is they all view taking care of the guests and as the most important thing, and making
the common thread
happy.
Was the word that they all used was love. And
if they have to change what they do to make certain people happy, they'll do it to a certain extent. And I was just remembering some of the chef interviews where we didn't hire the guy.
Oh, we've had there. I'm always amazed, and you've heard, if you listen to this show, you've heard us talk about things like this a few times. I'm always amazed at the things people say at an interview. And I was talking to Francis and Dorothy and you all earlier in the show about how one of the people I just interviewed for a job was talking to me, and he said, "Oh, you know, so you guys are really into, you know, making sure that the customer feels like they've just gotten a big hug, and that's kind of what you want your customers to feel." And I said, absolutely, I want my customers to feel that kind of pleasure and intimacy that comes from coming into my restaurant.
Yeah, but we were talking in the break about a guy who had come through, and he was talking, this is years ago.
Oh, it's got to be 10 years ago.
And he was applying for a chef job, and he said, he was talking about his prior job, and he was chef at a restaurant that had closed.
And we asked him, so why did your restaurant close? I mean, you seem like a talented guy, you know a fair amount about food. Why did your restaurant close?
And he said, well, the problem is, I was over there, I was doing great food, but the staff up there, they didn't understand me. And the customers, they are stupid.
They were stupid customers. They didn't understand what I was doing.
Well, they all have jobs still.
So here's what I have to say to all of you stupid customers out there. Score one for you. And you very, very intelligent chefs out there, well, you don't have a job.
It's all about the love, everybody. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450 times 12 noon.